Welcome to Gospel Tangents, the best source for Mormon history, science, and theology. I'm Rick Bennett. I think most people would agree that polygamy was practiced secretly in Nauvoo. Now the question is whether Joseph Smith knew about it or not. We'll talk about the four types of evidence that we would expect to see, and whether that evidence should apply to Joseph Smith or, as polygamy skeptics often do, only apply it to Brigham Young. So we'll talk about that in our next conversation. You won't want to miss it. Check it out.
And so one of the things I'd like to do, if we could, is talk about some of the evidence. I'd like to go back to Kirtland, but I know in your paper you stuck with
Nauvoo. Right. I mean, we could. I mean, it's like a.
Let's go with the strongest evidence first, and then we can jump.
We can go with the strongest kind of evidence. So again, so since polygamy is something that was happening, and that was being denied openly while being practiced privately. Your contemporary, you're going to have basically a few kinds of evidence. You're going to have, I would say four kinds of evidence. And it's important to look at all of these. You're going to have privately held evidence that are private records by the people that are participating that are pro-polygamy, that are faithful.
Mm-hmm.
You're going
to
have
faithful to the LDS church.
Yeah, faithful to that are. You're going to have, and so because somebody who's faithful is not going to talk openly about polygamy at that time, they're not going to do it.
Because it's against the law, for one thing.
Well, because it's against Joseph's wishes.
Joseph doesn't want people talking about it.
Joseph doesn't want people talking about it, so they're not going to do it. The other people are the people who have some insight and knowledge that that feel no obligation to honor the wishes on that. Yeah. And so they're dissidents. They're people, a lot of times they're it's because of polygamy that they're dissenters. That's what's turned them off. Other times it's other reasons that they've been turned off, and they're, since they have this, they're going to use this as retaliation. It's going to be that. And so you're going to have those, and those are going to be your contemporary evidence that's going to fall into those two categories. Those are really the only reasonable expectations. And then you're going to have later evidence from friendly people who are participants that are going to talk about it after the secret's out. And then the fourth category, I think this is a very good, very important one to talk about, is third party evidence. So this is going to be accounts from people usually later after the secret's out, who are neither anti-Mormon, dissenters, or pro-polygamy. So people who have no reason to want to discredit Joseph Smith, to want to attack Joseph Smith, and have no reason to want to promote that he was a polygamist. Now you asked about rules about evidence. There's another thing that's called about hearsay. It's called the statement against interest. If somebody says something that goes against their interest, that carries some weight. And so if you want to, so we can look at some of the contemporary, do you want to start with friendly contemporary evidence? Some of those.
Let's go with contemporary.
There's some of it. So for the vast majority of Nauvoo plural marriages, and whenever you talk about the contemporary evidence for Joseph Smith's plural marriages, you have to ask, how does it fit in the context of plural marriage generally in Nauvoo? In other words, is the evidence for Joseph Smith's plural marriages, is it more or less than it is the other plural marriages that happened at the time? And really for the vast majority of plural marriages that happened in Nauvoo, the first time it's ever on paper, ever gets put to paper, is when when the temple was operational, when they started doing ceilings in the Nauvoo temple in January and February 1846. Now, this is after Joseph's died. So even a lot of Brigham Young, like Lucy Decker, who's Brigham Young's first pro wife, that's the first time we see it on paper, that him and Lucy Decker, even though they have a child by this point, that's the first time we've seen it on paper. And we don't get the date when they were actually sealed in 1842 until the 1869 affidavits, when Lucy Decker wrote an affidavit saying that she was sealed to Brigham Young in 1842. That's the first time we get the date. about when it happens. So that kind of gives you an idea about how I don't think Joseph Smith's plural marriages are less documented than the other ones, or less documented than the other ones would be had those participants also died early in the game. You know, you say if you were to cut off the evidence that Brigham Young was a polygamist in June 27th, 1844, you'd have much the same thing, even though he clearly was. And at this point, nobody's really arguing that he wasn't.
Right. Brigham was a denier up until then.
Right. Nobody's really arguing that he doesn't. And so that's the thing is a lot of these using these denials as being really dispositive, prima facie evidence. That becomes less weighty once you've established that polygamy was happening in secret.
Mm-hmm.
And so with that, so I think some of the things that we'll be looking at, we'll see. I mean, one of the big things, of course, is there's Joseph Kingsbury's copy of the revelation that Joseph Smith dictated to William Clayton. There's William Clayton's journal is a huge, huge thing that details a lot of Joseph Smith's plural marriage. I mean, you'd have to argue that was falsified to say that, to discount that. He's very direct. He says a lot of times he talks about Joseph facilitating his own plural marriages, William Clayton's. He talks about how he performed the plural marriage, how he performed the ceremony between Joseph Smith and Lucy Walker.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the Joseph's conflicts with Emma over the issue. He talks about scribing the revelation. That's a big thing. So William Clayton's journal. And a lot of the evidence, contemporary evidence, is fragmentary. Meaning you can tell the people are trying to avoid openly saying Joseph Smith is polygamist, but they kind of are still trying to. So Brigham Young, he writes in his journal when Joseph Smith marries Agnes Colbreth. He says, Joseph Smith, Agnes Colbreth, and he uses Masonic cipher, Royal Arch Masonic cipher, to abbreviate wed and sealed, WAS, which is also the same phrase that he uses later to denote his plural marriages. Later. Oh. Yeah. And that's used a few times. And so
if you know the code, you can decipher what happened.
Right. And another one is in Joseph Smith's journal. So Willard Richards was the primary person keeping Joseph Smith's journal at the time. He doesn't really write in there much about plural marriage. But when Joseph Smith married his wife Rhonda, Joseph married his wife Rhonda, who is Willard's sister. And then at the same time, he seals Willard Richards to a plural wife. He writes it in Taylor's shorthand. You can go to the Joseph Smith papers and see that. He uses Taylor's shorthand. Mm. And he does that a few times when he writes about things that are of a sacred nature. Like whenever he talks about the second anointing or something, he'll write the person's name, and then he'll write and wife anointed. In Taylor's shorthand. They want to have that. I read there's a letter that they have from Violet Kimball to her husband Heber, where she writes about how she met with Parley Pratt and his wife, and how and she uses the word, she says, she writes J dot 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 F met with Parley and told him that she never says directly polygamy. She says that he can take you know, that it was his privilege, that he had his favor, that he could take his privilege. His wife doesn't know what to feel about it. Joseph has picked out someone to be his privilege for her. And I've spoken both to her and to Sister Pratt about it. So, I mean, you would have no idea what they were talking about,
right?
If you didn't know. And she doesn't even want to write Joseph's name out. But it's very clear that's who it is. I mean, she writes Joseph, she writes J, F, H at the end, and then has dots. The correct number of dots of letters in his name between
J and F. Yeah,
So there's another one. So there's the Lott family. So I mentioned Melissa Lott earlier. So when she was had her ceremony, Joseph and Hiram, they seal her parents together. And what was it, at least for the time of monogamous sealing? And so, and they write that in their family Bible, you know, sealing performed by Hiram under Joseph's seal. Hiram performed it, and then Joseph sealed that ceremony between them. And then it says, gave daughter Melissa to wife.
Wow.
Yeah. And so on the very same date. So basically, they had a deal where they got together in the secret thing, and they married. They did a ceremony for the parents, and then Melissa then takes a husband. And in the next few entries in the Bible, it's Melissa Smith.
Oh.
So there's these very oblique things. Yeah, when Joseph Smith III came to visit Melissa Law, she showed him that, and he thought, okay, he had to admit that seemed like it. And he said, well, and he asked a bunch of other things. Did you ever cohabit with my father? And she said, well, no, of course I didn't. So he didn't hold himself as wise. We didn't do that. He goes, okay, well, maybe she was just sealed to him. And he writes that in a letter to one of his associates in Utah. He says, I believe Melissa Lott was adopted into my family, into that. And so he finds that pretty compelling. And so that's one thing. So there's quite a few little things like that, and it's fragmentary, but that's also the case for the other plural wives too. The other things that happen at the time. And so, so private contemporary evidence, it's about what I would expect it to be given the circumstances. So you want to talk about that? You want to talk about public evidence?
Definitely. That's exactly where I was going next.
Yeah, I'll talk about public evidence. So in that case, I think there starts to be rumors, at least by April. Starts to go by April 1842. So as the circle expands, as more people know about it, I mean, he did a pretty good job keeping it, keeping a lid on it and keeping it within the circle in 1841. But it's in April 1842, that's when Martha Brotherton starts telling her story that Brigham Young proposed to her in the upper floor of the Red Brick Store after she moved from England. And when she said no, he went and got Joseph and Hubert C. Kimball. And they tried to convince her, and she wasn't having any of it. So she leaves the church because of that. And so she starts telling that story. We don't really get like a full detailed account of hers until John Bennett later, but she starts telling it in April. And people start, you hear references to it at beginning in April. And that's also when the Relief Society goes to investigate the rumors that Joseph is paying too much attention to Agnes Colbert, who is, I don't know if I mentioned that, who's his brother Don Carlos is dead at this point. And so she's his brother's widow. And okay. So that starts.
Is that like a Leverett marriage?
Yeah. Yeah. That's typically how it's characterized.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. Then there's the fallout with John Bennett. So John Bennett's activities comes to light. There is actual academic disagreement on how connected, if at all, John Bennett's activities are to Joseph's. I mean, like Fawn Brody just says they're one and the same, treats them like they're one and the same, and says that basically at this point, Joseph is kicking him under the bus, is kicking Bennett under the bus so he can defray suspicion of him or such. Brian Hales, for instance, on the other side of the spectrum, goes absolutely not. Bennett's no way connected. In any way, I think kind of the majority opinion, and these are places like if you like Gary Begueras or papers on it, he's written some excellent papers on this, has said, well, Bennett has some inside knowledge.
Yeah, I know Larry Foster has said, you have to verify what Bennett those, because he exaggerates a lot.
Oh, he absolutely exaggerates a lot. And that's part of the thing. And that actually makes it kind of easier to disclaim polygamy, because you can say, well, all the stuff that John Bennett's saying that we're doing, we're not doing. And you are technically telling the truth. Brian Hales wrote a wonderful paper about that. I think it's called 19 Denials, where he goes through the context of each one. And he says it's to the extent possible, they were trying to tell the truth. And so John Bennett gets excommunicated. There's about four or five other men that do in 1842 that are connected to Bennett. There's a law. There's Joseph brings sexual slander laws against Chauncey Higbee, who was one of his associates, and that was supposed to go to trial in Carthage. It doesn't. The Prices point to that and say, well, Joseph was ready to defend it in front of an actual civil or criminal court in that he wasn't in control of in Carthage, but he couldn't do it because he had been a warrant was out for his extradition back to Missouri, and he had to go into hiding in October when they were supposed to go to trial. But he didn't have to. There's lots of stuff there. I mean, I don't think he actually had to be there to take it to trial. It was criminal charges. It was a criminal case that he was prosecuting, and he could have had anybody else. It was State of Illinois versus Chauncey Higbee, not Joseph Smith versus Chauncey Higbee. Right. And so he did a very similar. He had done other things during that time where he had legal representatives go represent him in legal matters in Carthage during that time. But part of that is when Chauncey Higbee was first tried, he didn't really have any inside knowledge in what Joseph was actually doing. He only just did it because John Bennett told him Joseph was doing it. And he even swore out an affidavit saying that too. And so, but then after John Bennett in July, 1842 is when John Bennett comes out with a lot of his letters. John Bennett talks about Joseph proposing to Nancy Rigdon, who's
the happiness letter.
Yeah, there's the happiness letter. He publishes that. The happiness letter. Which
so Bennett publishes the happiness letter.
Bennett publishes the happiness letter.
And tell why that's an important line, because we still use it in general conference.
We do. And again, there's disagreement about whether or not, even among academic scholars, in the Joseph Smith papers, they said it's a possible Joseph Smith document. And so there's that. There's the
incident. But Joseph says in there, and this is why it's important, what is wrong under one circumstance is right if God.
Right. So he basically gives a doctrinal exposition on the divine command theory of morality. What God commands to be right is right, no matter how we might feel it. And so we'll understand those things once we do it and we see the blessings. Yeah. So I think he could have. I mean, there's debate about it. I would say that the happiness letter is not one of those things that you would hang your hat on as far as Joseph Smith being a polygamist.
But I do know that it has been quoted even recently in general conference.
It has, yeah. It has. I think the most compelling thing that that Bennett puts forward is he gives a list of a few of Joseph's wives. He does this in the History of the Saints that he publishes later in 1842. And he correctly identifies some of them. He correctly identifies Priscindia Huntington. He correctly identifies Louisa Beeman. He correctly identifies Agnes Colbreth. And he does a similar thing to what we saw in what I told you about that Valet Kimball did.
Valet
Kimball did about Joseph's name. So he takes their name, the women's names out, probably because he doesn't want to open himself up to a sexual slander.
Yeah.
Right. John Dinger wrote it. I wrote an excellent paper on that. I recommend sexual slander laws and that. And so he takes that where he takes, like, he'll use the first letter of their name and then he'll have dots for the rest of their letters. And so if you know who they are, it fits.
Yeah. And so it's got the right number of letters.
Right. And so one of them, he says, and he also says outright, he says, when he uses Louisa Beeman's name, he says, performed by Joseph Bates Noble. And he says with Agnes, he says Agnes Smith, because that's her married name. She's the widow of Don Carlos Smith. So that's her married name. He says Agnes Smith by Brigham Young.
Couldn't Brigham get him for sexual slander on that or not? I guess it's
No, because he facilitated. Maybe not. I don't know. I don't think so. Probably not. Because, I mean, it wasn't him doing it. He wasn't him doing it.
He was just performing the wedding or the sealing.
So, I mean, that's an important thing. I mean, that's something that's supported by other evidence, right? I mean, you have Joseph Bates' testimony, Noble testimony saying, yeah, that's exactly what I did. I mean, if you look at that, I mean, you can say at the very least, this isn't something that Joseph Bates Noble made up whenever he swore out the affidavits in 1869.
Right.
You can't say that because there it is in print.
And this was published in 1842, you said?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Joseph's still alive.
Yeah. So, and I mean, and that's kind of where I'm going with all of this is you really see how this evidence intersects. It really, there's things where we don't know, there's things where it disagrees, but there's so many of these little places where it intersects that, yeah, I think I can say it is a pretty compelling case. That's enough to say that these public denials by Joseph and Hiram and Emma later in life are not really enough to explain this and why I don't think necessarily a Brighamite conspiracy, even if it hypothetically did exist, would explain this evidence. And so that's 1842.
I hope you enjoyed our conversation with attorney Mark Tensmeyer. In our next conversation, we'll talk about how Orson Pratt reacted to the news that his wife, Sarah, told him that she had been proposed to by Joseph Smith. How did Orson react?
They take a vote about sustaining the good character of the prophet, and Orson Pratt goes, I abstain.
Oh.
And he, yeah.
If you'd like to hear the entire interview uncut, please subscribe to patreon.com/gospeltangents for just $5 a month. Patreon is spelled patreon.com/gospeltangents. If you'd like to watch the entire video, you can subscribe at YouTube, Patreon, or on my website at gospeltangents.com and click the yellow subscribe button for just $8 a month. PDF transcripts are just $10 a month, and you can get those on patreon.com/gospeltangents or on my website. I'll send those to you as soon as I've finished completing it. If you'd like to get a paperback and PDF, just subscribe for $20 a month at either Patreon or on my website. Individual paperbacks are available at amazon.com. Just do a search for Gospel Tangents interview, and you can find all of our past interviews there. Show your Gospel Tangents pride by purchasing a t-shirt on our website at gospeltangents.com/shop. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts at tinyurl.com/gospeltangents. You can get our latest updates by friending me at Facebook, or you can also follow our page at facebook.com/gospeltangents. Become an insider and you can see the newest videos. Follow us on Twitter at gospeltangents. Click here to subscribe, here for a transcript, and over here we've got some of our great videos. Thanks again.